Welcome to All the Smoke, a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio in partnership with Showtime.
Welcome back, man. Season 2 of All the Smoke.
We got a real special guest.
What's up with you, Brody, with the virtual handshake?
I'm going to tell y'all something that I never told nobody.
I want All the Smoke.
Welcome back to another edition of All the Smoke, my brother Jack.
What's happening?
This is the first time we've done a remote episode.
In studio. Yes, sir.
But our guest is worthy. We wish he could have him in person. But to me, growing up playing football, someone I really enjoyed watching, wish he could have played longer, wish he could have played for a better team so we could have seen him get a ring. But welcome to the show, Calvin Johnson, man. Calvin, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here, fellas. Glad to be here.
Thank you for your time. Current checkup, how's the family? Considering COVID and everything that's going on, how's everybody holding up out there in Michigan?
So the immediate family, we're all good here. You know, we're trying to, maintain our guidelines, I guess you could say, with COVID, even though the whole world is starting to get lax. You know, we're just trying to stay tight because, you know, we got family members, you know, that have, pre-existing conditions that, you know, that could be real, real troublesome for them. You know, not to mention, I know three people personally, you know, that have passed from it, you know, two of them being foundation volunteers of mine. So, you know, I know, you know, it's hit home, you know, so it's not nothing for me to lax on, really. You know, I'm just trying to, you know, maintain, just remain stringent with the rules that we have in place for at home and at work.
That's what's up. You mentioned before we got on air, you got another little man on the way. Congratulations with that.
Yeah, little boy, another little knucklehead, man. I don't even know if we're gonna name him, but I can't wait. We're one to have a girl. You know, we got two boys, so but hey, you know, we got another boy, and we're done.
I got three boys. What are the ages of your boys?
Six and two, and a new one on the way. On the way.
Well, definitely a boy, Dad. I feel you. I wanted to get a girl. I couldn't get a girl. Jack, on the other hand, has a house,
house full of girls.
Flock full of girls.
Whole team full of girls. Five girls.
Jack got five girls. You know, with the current state, obviously with the pandemic being what it is and current social justice climate, what are your thoughts on where America is right now?
Man, you know, you see it on a daily basis. I mean, you walking around here, I live in an area, it's predominantly white, once you step above 8 Mile in Michigan, that's just how it is. You're in the suburbs. And, I go around here, I'm riding my bike, people are pretty friendly, but you still have the people that are just nasty. And I think that the climate, it kind of brought that out in a lot of people where it's just okay for them to just be nasty, And so, I mean, white people, I'm not just, the climate is divisive all around, but I'm talking about, these white folks just being nasty and not, that racial bias is coming out. I'm from Georgia. I'm used to seeing it. And the problem I feel like I have is that, being from Georgia, you're seeing it all the time. You go into the store, whether they're following you, just weird, stupid questions, you go mute to it. It's just something that just happens. You just get used to it, but then when things like we see with thanks to the cell phone, our brothers getting killed, by police, that kind of brings up all the tensions, and it makes you think like, okay, why am I mute? Why am I on mute? This needs to be, people need to talk about this. This isn't anything, this racial tension has been here for a long time, and we got to get to the bottom of it. I mean, we know what it is, but the conversations just aren't had because, I mean, once one person says, one thing the other person doesn't like, then people shut down. You guys got to be open to the dialogue, and that's where we're just not open to the dialogue, really.
Yeah, I think I'm 40 years old, and I feel we've never been more divided as a country. And I think you make a great point. It's the conversations that need to be had, but they're tough conversations. And we had Charlamagne on our show a couple weeks ago, and he's just like, white people don't want to give that power up. That racial tension, that racial hate is power in their mind because it's always come from a powerful place they feel. Even though they're not more powerful than us, they just kind of have that feeling about themselves. So, the way that the world is so mixed up with so many biracial children now, I mean, the world is turning browner by the day, So at some point, all this shit is going to have to give. So, I'm hoping everything we're doing now is for, your three boys and my three boys and Jack's kids in the future, because it definitely for the first time they're listening. So now we got to have some kind of plan moving forward.
Amen. Amen. Look.
Let's go back to high school, where all this amazingness started. A football star, a baseball star. How did you get into football and baseball growing up?
Always played sports growing up, t-ball. My mom wouldn't let me play football, though, when I was a kid. She said I'd get hurt. She told me first time you'll be able to play football is when you get to middle school. So, you know, I grew up, like, in Fairburn. They call it the Fairburn Flames. You know, I'd be leaving baseball practice. They out there with their blue uniforms with the orange flames on the helmet. You know, it was fire. You know, I just wanted to be a part of that because it looked cool, you know. And and my mom was like, no, you're going to get hurt. No, you can't play until you're in seventh grade. So I got to play when I was in seventh grade, and I was a straight scrub. You know, I wasn't the same. I didn't hit my growth spurt yet. I was just, you know, just an average kid out there. I played running back and cornerback. You know, I was more so like a tackling dummy out there on the practice field because I was skinny. You know, I was kind of tall. You know, I was just not coordinated, none of that. Went to high school, hit my growth spurt. And more so than anything, I still wasn't coordinated. You know, I hadn't trained all that yet. I mean, I could play baseball, you know, I could run, I could hit, you know, I could do all the basic things, the fundamental things, but as far as playing football, running the route, catching the ball, and then, you know, while you're running full speed, those things just weren't dialed in yet to the point, you know, I got called Butterfingers when I was in high school. A lot of people don't know that. My first nickname was Butterfingers. You know, I remember, man, I used to be dropping balls, like, left and right. You know, they put me on the varsity, and I had a bad game. I had, like, three crucial drops. And from that point on, I was Butterfingers. And, you know, I was like, man, all right, I got to resurrect it. I can't have that nickname. So from that point on, just the work ethic kicked in. And I was like, nah, I ain't never going to be like that. They ain't never going to be me again.
So somehow you went from Butterfingers to Megatron. How the fuck does that happen?
Focus and determination, man. At the time, I was like, okay, I didn't know what the best was, but I just know I didn't want to fail. And I think at that time, it was more so just a fear of failure. You know, I didn't want to be that guy. You know, I didn't want to be the guy that's here dropping the ball, not being accountable. That's one thing I couldn't be. I did not want to not be accountable.
Well, I mean, you got to think about it. I mean, you have kids now. Jack and I have kids. Like, when we were younger, we played outside and played. Like, mm-hmm. We didn't work out. We didn't lift weights. We didn't sports-specific train. Like, we played tag until our mom and dad told us to come in the house. You know what I mean? So it's much different for us to naturally be gifted and then really have to start working at it. Like, No bullshit. I played football, baseball, basketball, track. I didn't start working out for basketball in the NBA until I got to the NBA.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And now, like, I have kids now that are, you know, 11. They've been training for a couple years now. So it's just like it's a way different dynamic now from when we grew up to how sports and kids and training is now.
These dudes, they're hitting the weight room early now, man. I didn't hit
Crazy,
the weight room early
right.
until I got to college. You know, we did some stuff in high school, but it wasn't nothing serious, you know. Yeah, we pushed some weight, but it wasn't until we got to college where, you know, I put on, like, 35 pounds when I got to college.
I didn't do nothing. My name changed at 12 years old from Steven Jackson to Always High. And I was just talented enough in basketball. God just gave me a gift, and I just played it. And from the area I came from, it just gave me the attitude to go out there and not back down from nobody and just be tough, and that took me over. But, no, I didn't work out to do nothing.
How that's did what we love,
curling blunts. I was curling that, blunts.
That attitude, though. That's what we love, man. We both
yeah,
love
the
that attitude.
Attitude,
man. Yeah.
The dog, yeah. Who gave you that nickname, though?
What?
Which
Always
one?
High.
Myself.
Okay.
I called myself Always High. Because people always ask, no, are you high? I say, my name is all first name Always, last name High.
This is crazy. So, high school star, what was the recruiting process like? You decided to stay home. Did you take any serious consideration about going anywhere else?
Yeah, I mean, I thought about Oklahoma. They were sending me letters. You know, they were hot at the time. I thought about Clemson because, I mean, obviously that was close to home. But, you know, they always had tall receivers like Twin Towers, you know, so I admired that. But at the end of the day, I just wanted my family to be able to see me play. That's why I stayed in Atlanta.
What was it like at Georgia Tech, though?
Awesome. If you're at Georgia Tech, you wouldn't know you're at campus. I mean, besides the school being, like, really hard, man. It's just like, you're not there for football, you're not there for sports, you're there for school. That is first and foremost. The teachers, they're going to make that known from day one. Like, if you get it confused, they let you know. Don't worry, because you're going to have a D on them. You're going to have, like, a 2.0 grade point average messing around and not doing your work there in Tech. But being in Atlanta, man, you're right there by the AUC, Clark, Atlanta, Spelman. My mom and sister went to Clark. You know, so I've been around. I know the area. I knew
in the heart of Atlanta, you gotta be focused,
man. You gotta be focused, and I mean,
you gotta be focused.
There's guys that came before us that got kicked out of school there because, yeah, like I said, school was hard and they didn't play. But I mean, there's so many distractions being in Atlanta. You know, it's easy to get caught up doing not what you're supposed to be doing.
Very decorated college career. I mean, the list of accolades from all say ACC first team to All American to ACC Player of the Year. You decided to leave school after your third year and take your talents to the NFL. What was it like being drafted number two overall?
I seen you at Georgia Tech, let me say that. And what I noticed was every time you got one-on-one, even if you wasn't open, they threw you the ball.
Hey, that's my boy Reggie, man. Reggie told me, all like, hey, you all got, I'm going to throw you the rock, bro. And I was like, hey, man, I'm going to go get it. I mean, that's all I'm going to say. That's what I'm going to do. That's my job. But, you know, being drafted number two, I mean, it's surreal to me. You know, I'm just out there just going about my day. That's why I try to stack good days on top of good days, man. And, you know, just hoping that, you know, the fruits of my labor manifest in some form or fashion. And that's what happened with the draft. And it was just a quick process. Not quick, but it was so fast. Like I said, all you're doing is training during that time. You train. You know, like I say, you're stacking those good days up. Next thing you know, I mean, it's been 2 months and you're on an NFL team. Next thing you know, you're buying lunch, carrying helmets, and you're not the big dog anymore. You know, you go right back to the bottom. So, and having to fight your way back up. And the only way you do that is just by showing, coming to a good attitude and good effort and just, I mean, balling out at the end of the day.
Did you picture that? Because, like, me and Matt both had, like, we pictured, like, the NBA draft and getting drafted in the NBA. Did you picture baseball, the baseball draft or the NFL draft?
As a kid? I forgot to mention that, like, growing up, I played baseball as my sport, you know. The Atlanta Braves, you know, God bless their soul. They got dang lost the other day. But, man, the Braves was a team. You know, baseball is my sport. Ken Griffey Jr. is my favorite player. I want to play center field. Want to, you know, hit home runs, all that. You know, I got drafted out of high school to play baseball. But it just came a point where football just took over. That team sport, you know, just kind of took over. That camaraderie, you know, they couldn't get enough of it.
No, that's crazy you say that because I loved baseball growing up, too. And we got a chance to interview Griffey last year on this show. And he texted me out of the blue the other day. And I'm just like, yo, someone I looked up to and admired so much just texted me to say, hey, how you doing? How's your family doing? I'm just like, that's the kid texting me. Like, King Griffey Jr., man. So no, I feel you on that.
The swing.
The swing. Awesome. The picture-perfect swing.
So sweet.
So you come into the NFL nearly 239, running a 4.38. At 6'4".
What the hell is that?
I mean, I just love hearing it because, like I said, football is my first sport. I love football to death. You know, I led the nation in touchdowns. I'm 6'7", and I ran a 4.39 my senior year. So, like, you were someone when I saw coming to the league, I always used to think, like, man, if
you're
I would have stuck to it.
That fast. Thanks.
You know, what would have happened? Like, I used to really watch you, like, damn, like, I would see the hits you take, like, damn, I'm 3 inches tall. They would have really fucked me up on that one. Or just the way you were able to physically dominate dudes because we had a similar body style. So it was just so dope watching you do what you did. And I wish, like I said in the opening, that you had a chance to win more, you know what I mean? And get in and play in playoff games and get a chance to really play for a ring. And the fact that you didn't, how tough did that weigh on you, you know, getting later in your career?
I think the main reason I decided to stay in Detroit was because I legitimately felt we had a chance to win that ring. I mean, we had an offense that was putting up 4,000 to 5,000 yards a year on offense, and we had a defensive line. I mean, we had a decent secondary too, but we had a defensive line that featured Ndamukong Suh, Nick Fairley, a young Willie Young, C.J. Mosley. But yeah, man, we had a mean defensive line. Like O-lines, quarterbacks are scared to come play you. That's what you need to win the Super Bowl. You need that good D-line. You need a defense that can hold up. And you got an offense that can score at will. You know, we had the makings. And then when everything got blown up there towards the end, we're in rebuilding mode. That's a wrap for me.
Yeah, that's tough. Early on, you did something that, you know, I like to see. And because I'm always pro player and get you held out as a rookie to sign a better deal. How did that end up unfolding?
Oh, man, I vaguely even remember that. Man. I do. What I do remember is that, you know, I just took the advice of my agent, Bus Cook, at the time, and he was just telling me, you know, this isn't the deal that we need to sign, you know, and I don't have the experience at the time, you know, that's why we brought him on board, you know. And, you know, it was really just me not accepting anything less than what I was worth. And that's one thing I'll tell any player right now, man. If you know, if you got a team by the balls, like, keep them there, you know, take
squeeze
advantage
them
of that.
Because, get your money.
Because once they got the other way around, you best believe they're going to exercise on you.
So you sustained a back injury early on in your career. I'm sure the athlete in you wanted to get you back out there as fast as possible. Started taking Vicodin for the pain. Was there any side effects from opioids? And then we'll obviously transition that into to the cannabis talk.
Yeah, man. When I hurt my back, man, I couldn't. It just lack of mo. I couldn't do anything. Swelling back there. I took the opioids. It was mainly Vicodin. Was taking so many of them. I was like, I got knees. I was just thinking like, man, is this even good? You know, because the pain was always there. Anytime I would try to exert myself, you know, the pain was there, and that was the only thing that would kind of knock the edge off. And, you know, I didn't want to get reliant on that. I think when I came into the league, I came in from a holistic perspective, I guess you could say, with all my supplements that I took. You know, I had a doctor down in Atlanta, progressive medical clinics, not just a little bit south of Alpharetta there. Went there, did all my blood work, you know, found out where I was deficient, you know, gave me my supplements based off of those things. All the supplements that I had were clean. They went through the NFLPA, you know, and made sure. So I was just really taking that holistic approach, putting the things derived from the earth in my body and not really wanting to be relying on anything synthetic. And that's really kind of the same mind frame that brought me over to the wanting to be involved in the cannabis industry.
When did you personally start using cannabis?
My first time using cannabis was in college. My first experience, you know, I saw it in high school. I had new people in high school that used it, but it was just something that, you know, I knew if I came home smelling like some weed, Ms. Johnson gonna flip me upside down and beat me with some whatever's handy. You know what I'm saying?
My dumb ass took that chance and got them beatings every week. I never learned.
Hard-headed.
So you say you started in college. What was that first experience like? Because I remember I started when I was 14, and my first experience I was fucked up. I got a headache, fell asleep, but I wasn't a quitter. And the second time I got back to it, I mean, we've been married ever since. So, you know, I smoked all through high school, all through UCLA, and through my whole pro career. And I was someone that looked at it similar from a standpoint of I wasn't much of a drinker. I was a social drinker. And then any kind of even a Vicodin would like twist my stomach, like make me feel like I had to throw up. And then me having a football mindset, I'm like, I played through everything, you know, broken fingers, sprained ankles, you know, anything outside of me needing surgery, I was going to play. So cannabis was something that always relaxed me, focused me, helped, the anti-inflammatory. It just really, I felt like I was my best me when I smoked. You know, I smoked before the game, after the game, off days. You see me, I'm smoking. You know what I mean? So what did your routine, because we, you know, in Sports Illustrated, you mentioned, you know, you medicated after every game. When did you really start realizing that the plant was working for you?
I didn't realize until I got to the NFL. I don't understand, like, when I'm in college, you know, you didn't really suffer the same injuries that we did when you got to the pros. For some reason, like, it was just still have maybe a little bit more bend and elasticity to your joints and stuff, I guess, when you're in college. But when I got to the league, man, those hits and stuff, they started to, you know, compound and take their toll. And so literally, like, I would say probably my first 2 years in, you know, I started probably to have a good routine of, like, after the game, sometimes after practice, you know, I'm getting it in. Because, I mean, like I say, it's the only thing that brought comfort, that allowed me, one, to sleep, allowed me to relax, and allowed me to, you know, focus in and freed up some creativity as well. I mean, there's different,
absolutely.
I mean, there's so many different things that you can use it for, you know, like you say, information, you know, that was the key for me. And, but really just the overall emotional feeling of well-being, you know, that I got, you know, when I would, you know, indulge, you know, especially when you're dealing with pain.
Hey guys, sorry to jump in here. Calvin, is there like a fan on or a vacuum or something?
Oh shit. Yeah, my bad. My automatic vacuum. Come on. Hold on. My bad, man.
What was that?
Automatic vacuum, he said. Hey, that's what happens. Hey, when you got that much money, you got that motherfucking vacuum on. Hey, that man got so much money, he got that motherfucking walking vacuum.
Oh man, vacuum on auto, man.
Hey, what was the
Megatron got mega computers and all kind of gadgets running around.
Mega bucks, mega vacuums.
Mega vacuum.
Hey, what was the testing process like? You know, with Jack and I, when we first came in the NBA, we would get tested at the very beginning in training camp, and then we were free to do us, and that was the best time of our lives.
Right.
And then they started fucking around and giving us 4 random tests. That I had to start paying my trainers and to give me a heads up when it was coming just so I can kind of maneuver by.
I was what on was suicide your, watch.
Jack, yeah, Jack would trip if he couldn't have no weed. So what was your process? Was it one in the preseason and you were free to do it, or did you get tested during the season?
I'm going to let you know how messed up it was. The day they started on was 420. So between 420 and August, like, 8th, that's, like, your window for getting tested. And you can get tested anytime in that window. But once you get that test, you're good until that next year, until that next window comes back around.
You got a whole year.
So, yeah, like, whenever you get in that window, like, if you get it in August, you know, then you got to April. If you get it in April at the beginning, you got to April. But yes, yeah, you just, the part that sucks is, like, you got to, you know, train and be off of it, obviously, like, a month, you know, before, you know, give yourself some time for it to clear out your system. And then you got to be off of it until whenever you get your test. And say if you don't get your test from, you know, some from like March, when you get off of it until August 8th, you know, the last
fucked
day.
Yeah. They do you dirty.
It's tough.
And that test, that's a random time, right? They don't give you no heads up or nothing. Just in that window, they can say, CJ, we need your pee.
I mean, all right, so they will start, but they'll give you they'll tell your position group per se. You know, they'll be like, hey, we got your group like this week. And we got receivers this week. You know, that's about an early. You probably
that's
like
easy. I could have beat that every time. You give me a heads up, fuck out of here. I'm good.
Man, I was like, man, I think coming out my pores. I don't know if I could beat that one.
Yo, so no bullshit, man. I used to carry my detox drink with me. Like, I beat test day of smoking the night before, like, not knowing the next morning I was going to be peeing. Sometimes I didn't get the heads up, but if I get a little, give me 2 hours and I'm going to give you a clean test. Man. I don't care how much weed I smoked the night before.
You say that out loud, you be that goddamn brand.
An endorsement drink. I need me a detox drink.
He turned me on to a drink.
Yeah, I used to put everyone on to the detox drinks,
whatever,
man, because
drink
like
is,
to me,
I need to know what that is.
Yeah, to me, there was no other options. Like I said, we can laugh and joke about it now. And you know, we've only started gaining traction because there's been medical research behind it. Because, you know, now we're seeing that, okay, it does help with this, it does help with that. And we've been saying this the whole time, but we've been labeled as losers, stoners, dope heads, whatever you want to call it, because we knew what this plant from the earth did for us, but it just hadn't had enough research on it yet. So I'm just happy. Like I said, I'm glad we could laugh about it now, and I'm glad we're making progression in professional sports and across the medical field as a whole, but it really helps people. And then what's the alternative? I mean, as a GM or a president or owner, do you want your players drinking or all pilled up, or you want them sitting their ass at the house smoking a joint?
Laughing.
A lot.
I don't know what the culture was in the NBA, but I know, you know, I mean, everybody knows it now about the NFL. You know, when we got to the NFL, you know, you just go in the training room and get whatever you wanted. You know, it wasn't, you know, you just go in the pill bag, you know.
Yeah.
That's how it was.
No, it was like Skittles. For real, it was like Skittles. Anything you needed.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you needed. How did you get the name Megatron, and when did that stick?
When I got drafted in 07 to Detroit, my teammate Roy Williams, he was the starting ex-receiver at the time. It was just timing. Everything's timing, man. And with this specifically, the movie came out right in 07. And, you know, I guess he just said, hey, you're big, strong, fast. You move like him. He started calling me Megatron, but didn't really catch on until 08, you know, after that rookie season.
Second season, you're on the wrong side of history, going 0-16. What was that like?
A lot of dope that year. Had to be. Oh, man, you had to be smoked out that year.
Well, you're dang right, man. I mean, shoot, you got to come up somehow, man. You're going to always
straight up.
Don't know how to do that.
Straight
up. You don't know how to deal with that. Me and my homie was just like, bro, right. I don't know how long I want to play, man. Like, if it's like, we're going to be like this up here. Like, we in the cold. We got to finish our season in Green Bay every year. Like, man, this is abuse.
For real. So it took you guys a little bit, you know, it took you guys a little bit to get going in your first handful of years. You know, you guys finally make the playoffs in 2011. What was the process like just actually finally getting there after, like you said, all the ups and downs, the 0-16s, the 2-14s?
Yeah, you know, from talking to a lot of vets that played in different places, you know, and coaches and whatnot, you can come to realize, like, there's a time, I guess, when a team has a moment where they have this chance kind of to, like, you know, take it to the next level, keep this team together, allow them, build around this team, and let them, you know, go all the way with it. So, yeah, we got that team together, and, you know, that's what you do. You got the defense line together, you got the offense putting up these numbers, and we finally got there, good coaching. It's really just the team, and, you know, the team was vibing. We had a great chemistry. We were hanging out together off the field. You know, that's the feeling that we had. Guys were playing for each other. You know, there were no selfish motives. You know, we got the cancers out the locker room. You know, it's just that feeling of togetherness and moving as one unit. You know, everybody's marching to the same tune, saying the same things, whether it comes to the media, whether it was just us talking about, you know, how we're making each other better. You know, it wasn't BS. You know, it wasn't a bunch of off the field stuff. Everybody was focused. Everybody was able to compartmentalize and focus on the mission at hand. And that was just what's happening today. What are we doing today? Today's third down day. Okay, we're going to focus on third down day. Tomorrow's red zone day. We're going to have a perfect red zone day. And just stack those good days up. And that's what we were able to do at the highest level during my time in Detroit, were those latter years of my career there.
2012, you're rewarded for all your hard work. You signed a $132 million contract over 8 years. That's why you got walking vacuums in your house still to this day.
Right, exactly. Ching, ching.
$60 million guaranteed. I mean, for that time, this was something that was unheard of. Obviously, they rewarded you for your hard work on the field, and then you rewarded them with a career year yourself, 122 catches, 1,964 yards. I mean, what was that like? Considering still your team went back to not playing well, but you had an amazing season.
Yeah, you know, I was so fortunate. You know, my whole time in Detroit, man, I had a coach in Sean Jefferson. You know, I can't talk about my career without mentioning him, because, I mean, he's the same guy. You know, Sean Jay played for San Diego, Atlanta, and then New England, I think. He played for 13 years, you know, played under Bill Parcells, you know, one of the toughest coaches out there. And, you know, he brought that grit to the receiver lock, to the receiver room. And he asked us at the beginning of every season, do you want to be great? And, of course, you're going to answer yes. But he's like, I'm going to coach you like you want to be great. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, he did that. He did that each and every day, whether you felt like it or not. He got it out of you. And, I mean, him just pushing us every day, it helped us. You know, the main thing you want to do when you're practicing is bring that game-like intensity to the practice so that it translates to Sunday or whatever odd day you're playing. And, you know, he pushed that. He got that out of us. And he got it out of me each and every day while he was there. You know, it was sad to see him go after my sixth or seventh year. But, you know, he instilled so much at me at a time that, you know, that can never leave.
Yeah, 4-12, that looked like somebody who had a bad shooting night in the NBA. That record there, oh, my God.
That's rough. That's another rough season, bro. That's
man.
Rough.
How is it, though, for you, because obviously you're an ultimate team player, to have the type of season you had, you know, historical season in context, but still your team not doing well. You know what I mean? Like, there's no moral victories. You know, once you get to the pros, a fucking loss is a loss. You know what I mean? But you're still going out there putting up amazing numbers. How did you balance the two situations?
That's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, me personally, I'm like, okay, I'm out here. I'm just the overall, you know, 30,000 foot view. You know, I'm supposed to have 100 yards every game. I just got to do that. You know, that's just that's just my expectation for myself. If I don't get that, then, you know, I didn't do something right that day. I wasn't at my best that day. But it's just, it was hard, you know. But like I say, I had that coach that was pushing me each and every day. Mm-hmm. And that practice that I put in, all that running, all that stuff during the week, you know, it went for nothing. So I had to let it out on Wednesday. That frustration of losing, you know, the defenders had to feel that, you know. They felt that with every block, you know, every time I caught the ball and trying to get the yak, you know, they felt that because, you know, we had too much on the team to be falling by the wayside like that. And, you know, it's like I say, it's just aggression. And I just try to find, I just try to compartmentalize these things while I'm playing. That pent-up aggression, all that stuff, I just try to focus it, you know, and let it out in the field, whether it's us losing, you know, whether it's just, you know, just whatever it may be that's got me, whether it's just fired up. You know, I just try to focus that and put and direct it. And I was able to do that and, you know, put by the wayside, yes, we're losing. And just, you know, you never want to just say I'm focusing on myself, but I mean, I'm just focusing on being the best version of myself. And if I do that, you know, that's the best way for me to help the team, I feel like.
Facts. Yep.
You had a job to do. Yeah, we totally understand that. We've been on some teams and we was losers, but we still had a job to do. Who did you look forward to matching up with, though, in your career?
Patrick Peterson.
Yeah.
Them LSU DBs, man. Them boys be serious, man. You know, it's fun playing him because Pat, you know, he's in your face all the time. He's going to follow you. It's like kind of like the Jerry Rice, Deion, where he's going to go everywhere you go, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I appreciate that. You know, you appreciate that. One, that level of respect that you're getting because, okay, you're getting the other team's best defender. He's following you everywhere you go. And at the time, you know, I just know that at the time, like, okay, when I look back on this, this is going to be like some... It's gonna be some OG shit. You got two OGs battling right here, you know? Those kind of battles, man, because he's pushing me and I'm pushing him to bring out the best. And you're able to see some great plays, you know, from both of us when we got to play each other.
Over your career, is there one defense that stood out to you the most, like in a particular season, maybe a team you played that ended up winning the Super Bowl that year that you're like, God damn, that's a hell of a defense?
Yeah, I hated playing Minnesota Vikings, man. We played them twice a year. And all I remember hearing, man, our D-line, I ain't gonna call nobody out, our old linemen, but particularly our linemen, they would hate playing these guys. It's Jared Allen, those two big Williams brothers in the middle, you know, they would wreck our defense every week, you know. I think I don't know if y'all remember this, you know Dan Orlowski, the guy that's on TV, does all a lot of commentating? I don't know if y'all remember the year he ran out the back of the end zone.
From a safety?
Yep. He was literally running from Jared Allen because them dudes was getting after him all game and he just lost track of where he was because, he said,
fuck it, I'm out of here.
He's hauling heads. That's all he's doing.
Hey, so, I ain't mad at that. Hey. I ain't mad at that.
Hey. Oh, my God. He say, fuck that. I ain't taking that hit. Right. I'm hauling ass.
As a receiver, you know, you get teed off on. People always get to hit you. I remember I used to love the crackback, the peelback block. Do you have one particular peelback or crackback where you just fuck somebody up?
Man, I got one to tell you. It was an absolute fail, man. I got some that I really, like, you know, took some people out, you know. But I got one where it was an absolute fail, I'll tell you about. It's actually a little more fun. We were playing at Chicago, and this is my rookie year. And I had to go in and crack Lance Briggs from the Chicago Bears.
Good. He's from so we played in high school at the same time. He's from out my way.
Okay,
big
well, you know
boy.
You know he's solid. You know he's a man.
Big boy.
Somebody you don't want to have to hit. Man, he saw me. He like I'm coming down in motion. You know my little slow in my little short motion. You know act like I'm about to run my route. I'm trying not to look at him, but I'm peeking out the inside of my eye. I'm like I was trying to die. Damn, I hope he don't see me. I hope you don't see me. And, bro, right before the ball snap, he looked me up, and he looked right at me. And he just ran right when the ball snapped. He just ran right at me. He diagnosed the play. He just ran at me, ran through me, made a tackle. Like, I get cussed out on Monday. So,
yeah, that's funny. That's like I just seen one, like an old highlight of Ocho Cinco try to crack back on Ray Lewis, and he blindsided Ray Lewis, but still he was the one that still got fucked up.
Yeah, buddy. Ray Lewis, that's another one. You don't,
Big
every time
boy.
He tried to tackle me, I hit the dirt, man. He too big out there. He looked big.
What is your connection? You just said earlier you're still in Michigan. What's your connection to the Detroit community? How much did that mean to you?
In 08, I started my foundation, man, Calvin Johnson Jr. Foundation, just focused on helping the youth, abused families, and just individuals become better members, the best versions of themselves and better members of society. And so we've been giving scholarships in Atlanta and Detroit for the last decade now, like I say, since 08. And I do my camps both here and there. And we do, you know, things with kids, whether go to elementary school, you know, we read to the kids, just try to be available, talk to the kids, schools and teams whenever I'm available, you know, because, I mean, now I'm at the point where I'm like, okay, the best thing I can do is go out here and talk to these kids and just give them as much knowledge as I can and hope they hang on to something.
Mm-hmm. That's what's up. 2013, 7-9 season. 2014, 11-5. 7-9 in 2015. And that's when you, was that your final season?
Yeah, yep.
What was it like being one of the greatest receivers we ever seen in such a short span, but never really being on a consistent winner? Like you mentioned you guys felt you had what it took to build a championship type team, never really got over that mountain. But what was it like being so elite and then not really being able to shine or really get an opportunity to shine in the playoffs?
Yeah, it was unfortunate. You know, you can't go, but you can't help but have the feeling like we obviously didn't maximize the talent that we had, you know. And all you could do, anybody could do is point to self and like, hey, there's something, what could I have done better, you know? You know, I could have had, you know, maybe 2,000 yards, 1,500 yards 1 year. Maybe that would have helped, you know. And look back, maybe there's a ball I dropped that I could have, should have caught, you know. But, you know, it's just a simple fact that we didn't maximize the talent. I mean, you got me on offense, you got Stafford, you got Ndamukong Suh on defense. You know, you got some beasts all around the team, you know, in key positions that you should be able to, you know, be able to have a winning team. We just didn't have the winning culture, though. You know, it's a lot more that goes into it than just having those key players.
So tied to a big contract, not sure if it's rumors or not, but, you know, they won't let you out of the contract, and you decide to step away at 30. Was there ever a time you thought, okay, I took this year off, maybe I'm going to go back, or I've taken these 2 years off, maybe I want to go back? Did that ever cross your mind once you decided to step away from the game?
No, I mean, I can't say that I didn't think about, like, can I still do it? But it wasn't a long thought because, I mean, I was going to retire after my eighth season. You know, the only reason I didn't do it was because I was at home in Georgia talking to my dad on his couch. And I was like, man, Dad, I'm done. You know, I can't do it no more. You know, the team, they've blown up the team. My body is just aching. I don't have my range of motion like I used to. I can't get out. I can't dig like I used to. You know, I was like, I just don't feel it. I just don't have the love for it because it's always hurting. You know, I just don't have it. And he looked at me and he's like, you think you can do it one more time? And I was just, you know, I sat there and paused. I paused for a second. Once I paused, he's like, all right, you could at least do it one more time. And I was like,
All right.
So I went out for the last year. I knew my whole season is going to be my last season. I was telling my guys, During the season, like, you know, that, you know, may Kobe rest in power, man. He had retired. He had announced he was going to retire. And I was like, man, I'm going to be right behind Kobe, dog. I'm up out of here, man. I'm done. And my guys, they didn't believe me. They was just like, you know, shut up, man. But then after I retired, a couple of my guys looked back. They're like, dude, you weren't playing. You were dead ass serious. I was like, I ain't never lied to you.
Yeah. Was there ever a time that you wanted to, you know, get out, you know, with the NBA and the way players move around, the way superstars move around with pretty much free realm and free range?
That's amazing.
Did that ever cross your mind?
I'll tell you, that's something that the NFL guys admire about the NBA, man. I was like, God, how do they get out of there and just go here and there? Like, wow, that's awesome, you know. But, yeah, we wanted to try to, I mean, if I could have went somewhere else, maybe I would have maybe tried to stick it out a little longer, but it just wasn't worth it to me doing it there in Detroit.
Yeah, no, I feel that. You know, what's crazy to me, being such a football fan, to see that Barry Sanders did a similar thing you did. You know what I mean? Right. Played his ass off for 10 years and, you know, decided to respectfully step away and never really got over that hump. And then, you know, you come along as a receiver and do the exact same thing and we're never really able to get over a hump, but stay loyal, you know, stay loyal to the soil. So we were talking earlier before, can you imagine if, you know, if Barry got to run behind Emmitt Smith's line or Terrell Davis's line back then, or if you had Tom Brady, or if you had, you know, Aaron Rodgers, you know,
Peyton Manning.
What if Peyton Manning, you know, what happens, you know, I mean, as someone who didn't play the game, we like to fantasize and think like, what if they had you as a target? It would be incredible.
You know, it's funny, man, whenever we played Green Bay, you know, Aaron Rodgers, whenever he was over on our sideline, I'd just be standing there, he'd be over here, he's like, hey, man, you need to come on over here. I was like, man, I wish you could, dude. I was like, hey, man.
Hey, for real, you and Aaron Rodgers together? Holy shit.
Wow.
When you retired, obviously, before your contract ended, did you have to pay any of the money back? You know, I know football's a lot different with their money than basketball is.
Yeah. I mean, that's the reason for the rift between, you know, the team and I. You know, they made me pay some money back, so... You know, I mean, If it went, well, the reason I don't have any involvement with them is because of that. You know, like, you can't
really,
you know, make me pay money back and then still want me to come around. It doesn't work like that.
Right. Wait, so they wanted you to pay and then still kind of be an ambassador for the team?
Yeah, it don't work. Yeah.
Oh, fuck
that. You don't get
my services after that. After all the time I put in, you get no more.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. So in 9 seasons, over 11,600 yards, 83 receiving touchdowns, you rank on the all-time list. When you sit back and get a chance to just look at your career, what are your thoughts?
It happened so fast, you know. I keep going back to stacking those days up, man. That's all I try to do is just live in the moment and stack the days up. I think maybe you guys can attest to it, you know. You just try to live in the moment. Time flies, you know. And next thing you look back and you're like, whoa, I got a kid that's 2 years old. I got a 6-year-old boy that's just started school, you know. It's just like, dang. So I just try to, you know, continuously. I ain't perfect. You know, I try. And I have my days where I'm off. But I try to still just be the best version of myself and perfect any task that I'm, you know, focused on. That I'm doing at the moment, you know, and you know, that's just the principle of how I've been living.
Post career, you did a little bit on Dancing with the Stars.
Oh man,
talk to us about that.
Oh man,
that shit was fun,
happy
man.
Feet. Happy feet. Happy feet.
Now, y'all too tall, man. Them girls, they.
What you mean? You 3 inches shorter than we are. What you mean? We the same height.
That's the big difference, bro. That's a big difference. 6'8" and 6'5" was totally different.
Yeah, but how was that?
They gave me the call. I denied them like 2-3 times. And my wife said, you know, this is at the time, like, everybody was using YOLO, you know? And she was like, I told them, like, they keep on calling me about these dang shows. Man, what you think? She was like, YOLO. I was like, all right, for you. You know, I like spending time in Cali, you know, let's do it, you know? So ended up doing, I had a great partner. Even during that show, man, I almost stopped doing the show because my ankles were swelling up so bad. Oh, I couldn't,
really?
I really couldn't move and do the things I was supposed to do. I couldn't, you know, I just couldn't move. I couldn't, my range of motion was tied down. So one of my homies, he's in the film industry out there, played ball with me at Georgia Tech, Osahan Tongo. You know, we were just kicking it. And I was like, hey, man, like, I'm about to quit the show because, you know, I can't move out here like I need to. And I'm about to be out here looking like a fool on live TV, you know? So I was like, hey, I'll just kick me out, you know, whatever. And he was like, hold up, man, I got something for you. He brought me a topical. You know, it's my really my first experience really using topicals for me. It was just flower, concentrates maybe, you know. Mm-hmm. And I put that topical on my ankle, and over the course of the next couple of weeks, you know, I was like, okay, like my swelling's staying down. It's not, my ankles aren't ballooning up anymore. I'm like, it might be something to this. From that point on, yeah, I was already a believer, but really wanted to get behind the science of cannabis and learn more at that point.
Then you was in Cali, so you know you can burn freely. Mm-hmm. Just burn it down.
Yeah, you know it.
I wanted to touch on something, too, that you kind of reminded me. My brother played 8 years in the CFL, receiver, nearly died. His spleen almost ruptured, was retired after 8 or 9 years. But I remember his first couple years walking around like an old-ass man, and he was like 29.
Shout out, Jay.
How long did it take for your body to kind of... Is it still daily? Does it come and go? I mean, I play 15 and I wake up, thank the Lord, wake up every morning fine, like no aches, no pains. You played a sport obviously with more contact, but you got hit a lot, almost every single play if you wasn't blocking. I mean, if you wasn't catching, you was blocking at least. How is your body now and how long did it take for it to feel some sort of normalcy?
Yeah, it comes and goes, like you said. You know, it depends on what I'm doing. If I'm just riding my bike, you know, I'll ride my bike and I'll ride like 15 miles or something. I get back home, I'll have swelling in my ankle, so I'll yank out my topical and throw it, slather it on my ankles. If I'm doing my training, like my camps, man, you know, I try to, you know, in my camps, I demonstrate the drills I want to do, you know. Next day, I'm like out the bed, dragging my feet, like I just played the whole game the next day. So, you know, it just depends on the level of activity I do, but it doesn't take much to get the body all jammed up, not at all.
See, that's the thing that, like, the normal fan doesn't understand about the stuff we put our bodies through, in particular football players, is just, like, you have a life to live after, and it's not what you think, no matter how much money you may think someone got. Like, you're living with daily, real-life daily pain. Not to mention, you know, the CTE and the concussions. You know, you spoke on that before, something that, you know, is scary, and there's so much research on it now is the reason why I won't let my kids play tackle until they get to high school. What are your thoughts on all that, in particular CTE, because, you know, you've had a few concussions in your time?
Speaking about CTE, I learned more and more about it, you know, I'm not going to say every day, but like on a monthly basis, because we're associated with this company out of Orlando, Florida, called Nestre. I don't know if you heard of them. Basically, they got their name Nestre from neural strength. Basically, if you can imagine how you could build muscle, you know, you could rebuild brain.
Oh, really?
Your brain's a muscle as well. So it's called neuroplasticity, and it's just literally training your muscles and in your brain. You literally can reattach connections and build your brain up. So I implore you guys, look into it, please, because I think there's a lot to it. We're tied in with those guys, and they're from those guys, we got a connection with Harvard with what we're doing with cannabis. But going back to CTE, you know, just getting behind the research. Just learning more about, you know, trying to create solutions. You know, that's honestly what my companies are trying to do for players. You know, just create solutions in that space for guys, whether it's, you know, football, basketball, you know, veterans, you know, anybody that suffers from any kind of head trauma. But along with that, you know, it's just kind of just educating people about the psychology, mental health, emotional intelligence, all those things go together. I think that all those things all together, kind of like that, like in cannabis, you're talking about the entourage effect. When you get all those things together, it's all better.
Yes. You and your wife stepped into the cannabis space in 2019. Can you tell us about what you're doing in the space right now?
Yeah, I'd love to, man. We started here. It's been a journey. We're about 2.5 years in now. We started with some licensure issues at the very beginning. We got denied. They literally denied us because I had some traffic citations. I was like, really? They deny people over traffic citations? And come to find out, that wasn't nothing but bias. And and come to find out, I'm not going to say it's because of us, but that board that was making those decisions got removed. And we got approved about 30 days later, got licensed. And from that point on, we got licensed. We built out our first grow, 12,000 square feet. That's been operating for about a year now, and we got processing running that's been operating just this year, and we're in the process of getting our first two retails built out right now. So another month or two we'll be fully vertical. And along with the cannabis side, you know, I mentioned Harvard. We got the opportunity to do some further research and bring up some awareness there as well. So we got a lot of things going for us right now. Staying really busy right now. It's fun. But at the end of the day, we just want to bring a level of professionalism to this industry so people can respect it and educate people on the medicine.
Do you have your own brand, or are you white labeling? How do you get your flower out there?
Yeah, we have our own brand. Primitive is our name. Why do we call it Primitive? It's because it's the original medicine. You know, we spell it Primitive the regular way without the E at the end. So, so primitive cannabis, you know, elevated wellness is our thing. Primitive Group, you can probably look it up, primitivegroup.com. That's what we got, splash page, you know, just basically a little description of what we got coming.
Okay.
And you have to try it.
We definitely need some samples out here.
We have to try it.
You guys do edibles, tinctures, the whole nine? Yeah. You guys on the flower side?
We're capable of doing all extractions. We're capable of doing everything.
Okay. Nice. Yep. That's what's up. I want to talk to you about what you're doing because I'm working on some stuff too. So I'll get your number after this.
Happy to
talk about it. Yep. Do you still use? We just kind of just discussed it. It comes and goes. Do you still use cannabis for pain management now, or is it just more on a relaxed, focused tip?
Both. Okay. You know, it depends what I'm doing. I mean, like I said, if I want to be relaxed, if I want to, you know, go, if I got a busy day and I want to kind of chill, you know, before I get going, before I go to sleep, you know I'm going to have a great sleep and wake up, you know, 8 hours later, refreshed to go about my day.
Ready to go.
You know, it just depends, you know, but I'm usually every day. Yeah, I probably get it in at least once a day.
Yeah, that's what's up. Welcome. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
2021, you'll be a Pro Football Hall of Fame nominee. Should be an inductee.
Sure will.
What are your thoughts coming from the kid they used to call Butterfingers to next year possibly being an NFL Hall of Famer?
I think it's just, you know, a story of persistence, man. You know, you might get knocked down. You know, people might tell you, you're not this and that. You know, you might not win here or there, but it's just, I mean, in order for us to be where we're at, it's a lot of failures that happen, but it's a lot of getting up that happened too, you know? So, you know, it's just a matter of just how many times you're willing to get back up, you know? If you keep on getting up, you'll find success.
What are your thoughts? I mean, you guys have much bigger crowds than basketball does, and you saw the NBA played in a bubble. What would be your thoughts with playing with barely any fans or no fans in a big old football stadium?
It's tough, man. You get so much energy from the crowd. It's just like, it'd be like practice. You know, it'd be like training camp, like that one scrimmage, one or two scrimmages you have in training camp. But like, I bet the first game had to feel like that because guys had to get used to it. It probably wasn't until somebody got hit in the mouth for real. They're like, okay, this is real.
This shit is real, right?
Let me focus.
Hold on. I thought they were supposed to blow the whistle before you hit me. Hold up.
Straight up.
Being removed from the game now for nearly 5 years, do you still follow the game, watch it, follow any teams or players?
More so now over the last 2 years. The first couple years, you know, I just was so, you know, just not interested. I just didn't, just what the interest level wasn't there. But now over the last couple years, you know, we meet my brother-in-law or just the friends, you know, we're always, you know, we got a reason to watch. You know, we got somebody to pay attention to. Going around meeting different guys around the league after I retired and talking to different teams, you know, I've met some guys. I'm like, okay, let me pay attention to Amari Cooper. He seems like he's a good kid. You know, he's a good egg. Let me pay attention to, you know, I talked to Jarvis. Let me pay attention to see what they're doing up there in Cleveland. You know, I just like to, you know, see what those guys are doing that I've met that I've had a good accord with.
Do you mentor any of the younger guys or current guys in the NFL?
Not hand on hand. I've done some things with some of the guys. You know, as they come in, their agents will have me come out and talk to them, or coaches will have me come to teams and just spend time with the receiving groups, just giving them tidbits. I love doing that kind of stuff. Like I said, I just want to, you know, everything I got, you know, I want to, I mean, pour it back in. I might not know everything, but everything I got, I'm willing to give you. You just got to hold on to it.
You know a goddamn enough with the numbers you put up. You definitely know enough.
Short time.
Right, for real. Are you an NBA fan? Do you follow teams, players?
Yes, sir. I can't lie. I can't lie. I do watch more so towards when it gets closer to the playoffs. But
it's a long-ass season. We understand that.
Yeah, we don't watch half the shit either.
Yeah, you heard Jack say you don't watch half the shit either.
Man, can y'all, like, come straight from home and go hoop? Like, or y'all got to, like, I don't know, now you probably got one. But when y'all first started, y'all rookies and stuff like that, can y'all just, like, off the couch? Yeah. Had a nice little burger or something. Let me go.
And go.
It depends on the competition. I still can do that now. It just depends on who I'm playing.
See, I'm like you. Like, my post-career, I retired at 17, and I haven't had I don't want to play basketball no more. Like, I coach my kids, and I'll work my kids out, but I have no urge to run up and down the motherfucking court no more. Like, it's just naughty. But I can still talk about it, analyze it on ESPN, but I just have no urge personally to play it anymore.
I love the hoop. I love to run up and down the court, but I mean, I'm gassed, but I love it, man. Now, one thing, you mentioned, like, before the games, you would get in. Like, I'll tell you this. I did it one time, you know, and I was so paranoid because I had a good game, you know, and I was like, man, I don't want to mess it up, you know. I ain't going to do it no more. I never did it since then, but I had a
– So you smoked before a game and you had – you smoked before a game and had a good game?
Yes. It's one of those – all right, so this is a situation. I was on the way to a game, and I was just like – it's just one of those games, like man, I ain't got nothing else to lose, like – I'm hurt. Like, I don't want to play today. You know, I was just like, man, forget it. Like, light it up. I'm gonna hit the game, but I had a good game. You know, it's just like, and it really just took the edge off of everything. I feel like,
right,
the pain, and I was able to just, you know, function. And I was so paranoid. I was like, man, it was good while it lasted. I don't want to mess with that again.
That should have been a ritual. That should have been a sign right there. Like, shit, every day on the way to the stadium, that's what I need.
If there's a regret, maybe that. But the only other reason why I didn't do it was because, like, man, if you burn, like, I run all day. I got to run, like, you know, 3 miles a game, you know, so I'm just out there, all I do is run. So I'm just, I need my wind. I need my wind to be right. Yeah. And mentally, I was just like, man, this is messing my lungs, you know, if I'm out here running.
So, you were overthinking it because that was my game. I ran. So that's why it's funny because I would train that much harder in the summer knowing how much weed I smoked. No bullshit. Like, I really went out of my way because I love to run too. So I would run and do sprints in the preseason because I know my job was almost to be like a track athlete out there on the basketball court. So I would really prepare in the summer with extra shit knowing because I probably got about 300, 400 blunts coming this season ahead of me. So. Need to get ready for real. So, who's your NBA team, or some players you follow?
NBA team right now. You know, I was following the Raptors for a little bit just because I like I can't even pronounce the man's name. Siakam.
Pascal Siakam.
Pascal, yeah, I like him. Mm-hmm. I met him, been around him a little bit. You know, I just, like I said, the guys I meet, I follow those guys. I'm a big fan. I was a big fan of Kawhi. You know, and the thing mm-hmm. ever since he was coming out of college, you know, I've been following him a little bit. Literally, just because I just randomly seen him one time. You know, seeing him playing. You know, another random thing. You know, player I've been following is my man Gordon. When I went to Indiana. You know, mm-hmm. and just another situation, just randomly seeing him play. You know, I mean, I see you guys all the time, but you know, just guys that I just picked up on in college. You know, I watch college games probably more than I watch NBA, and some of those guys that I like, that I see the effort and the determination, I'll follow those guys through. So I get to see a lot of the league, especially around playoff time. So that's when I approve of the competition level.
Right. No, you're right. It's a long season. I figure, especially not being in it no more. I can see, like, there's, like, stretches during the season where the beginning of the season is fun, Christmas is competitive, and then January, February is bullshit. And then it gets picking back up after All-Star break in March going into the playoffs. But, I mean, 82 games is a lot of games to play and to have
to
watch.
Yeah, they play hard to get in the All-Star game. Then once the All-Star game time, they chill. Then when their team might not get in the playoffs, they push again. That's how it goes.
That's the route.
That's exactly how it goes.
All right, we're coming towards the end. Top five artists, in your opinion.
Top five artists. A current or just like just...
Whoever you like. It's your top five list.
Okay, my top five list. I started listening to Outkast. So Big Boy and Andre used to come. They used to come kick it at Tech, Georgia Tech. You know, so I got to see them in person. That was awesome. So I give it to them. I listened to some T.I. and Jeezy before every game.
Yeah, he's so Atlanta.
Trap.
It's really all Atlanta almost, you know. I'm a big
straight up. Hey, Atlanta got some good ass music though. I ain't even mad though.
I know. I'm trying to think who I know. There's a lot of West Coast rappers that I know, but I don't know if they get into my top because it's all Atlanta. Did I give you five? Jeezy.
That's three.
T.I., Andre. I'd say Outkast in general. Jay. I love J. Cole. Man, I'm in person, cool dude. You know, Jay just from, like I said, I already said Jay-Z. What's the name? Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah.
Yep.
Conscious rappers. But that was six, five or six. That's a nice list. I like how you're Atlanta loyal, because I'm West Coast loyal with my list too, so I feel it.
Yeah.
But when I'm West Coast, it's like I forget all about my Atlanta roots, and I'm trying to listen to all the West Coast rap. It's just right.
LA will make you forget you marry, make you forget your roots, make you forget everything.
Forget you live in another state. You feel like you living here while you're here. give me your top three songs that you train to.
Top three songs that I train to. Motivation, T.I., yeah. The Greatest, mm-hmm. T.I. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to give you one that's not T.I. It's going to be Jeezy probably. Thug Motivation.
Straight up. That's three good ones.
That's Atlanta anthems, though. They play them in the club. That's anthems.
Straight up.
No,
I don't even go to the club. I can't go to the club.
Nah, at all. Not at all. Days long gone.
Yeah. I mean, outside of your jersey being in
Magic City.
Magic City, I feel you.
He's definitely retired at Magic City.
Yeah. One quarterback you wish you would have got a chance to play with?
Aaron Rodgers.
Ooh. Green Bay.
That was quick.
That was easy, right?
I played twice a year, man. I got to see him in person, like, see him do the damage. You know, I should.
First hand.
I got to see him take over from Brett Favre. So I was like, shoot.
Mm-hmm. That's tough.
So before I ask you this question, when we asked our guests this question, that their answer, you have to help us with the answer.
I got
to
help
your answer,
you,
you have to, yes.
So yeah, if you know the person,
if you know
help
the person, you have to help us with the answer, your answer. All right, who would you like to see on our show?
Who would I like to see on your show? Damn, that's tough.
Good, I like that.
Obama. Obama. Obama.
Oh.
That'd be a good one. You got Obama's number?
Bro, if I can get to it, I will 100% try to make it happen.
Man, I appreciate you.
Text Bo, tell him we need to pull up.
You have five seats at your dinner table, dead or alive. Who's going to be at your dinner table?
Hey, man. Jeez. All right. Denzel.
He's Denzel. A regular.
Michael Jackson.
Regular.
Ooh, good call.
Who's gonna sit right here? Obama. I love Obama. I met him. He's awesome. Man. He's freaking awesome. I'm not gonna say Michelle because she was with Obama. I'm not gonna cheat. I got two more. Damn, who I want here? I want Kobe.
Yes, sir.
I love Kobe, man. I love Kobe, man.
You ever get a chance to meet Kobe?
That's my one regret, bro. I never met Kobe. And I was snowboarding when I heard about everything that happened, man. I was so, me and my wife, we were just, damn, man. You can see everybody on the lift. Everybody just like, the energy just zapped. It was like, man, it was terrible.
Yep.
Love Kobe, man. Love everything he was about, you know. Didn't get to meet the man, but everybody that I know that has met him, I'm sure you guys attest and say the same thing. One of the most hardworking individuals that to have his greatness manifest the way it did, you know, it was awesome to see.
Mm-hmm.
I need one more person. Let me get a woman at my table. Let me get a woman at my table. Let me get Harriet Tubman. I want to hear some stories. I want to hear some stories, man.
Some real stories.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, that's a wrap. CJ, appreciate your time, man. Good luck with everything.
Thanks, Meg.
Great catching up with you.
No, this is awesome.
You can catch this episode, All the Smoke, on Showtime Basketball YouTube and the iHeart Family Black Effects.
And everything else.
Everything else, yeah, everywhere.
All sorts of shit.
We'll see y'all next time.
This is All the Smoke, a production of The Black Effect and iHeart Radio in partnership with Showtime.